thing that you
Love
wrote.
Talk Radio.
Okay?
Okay. Yeah, just walk me through.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is Susan Heim. She is a longstanding author and an editor specializing in parenting, multiples, women's and Christian issues. Her latest books in the Chicken Soup for the Soul series are All in the Family and Devotional Stories for Women. Susan is also the founder of Twins Talk, a website where parents share tips, advice, and stories about raising twins and multiples. She is here to talk about her life's journey, motherhood, and her new book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Devotional Stories for Women. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. I appreciate you coming on this morning, and I really enjoyed reading the various stories in your new book, and it's so beautifully put together. I mean, it was just wonderful. I like particularly the way the biblical inferences throughout the book, and especially having a personalized prayer that is included at the end of each story. That is just wonderful touch. And so it's just, to me, it just sort of it ties everything in very beautifully. So, Susan, what I'd like to do is to get started to talk about your life's journey. Hey, I know it's an interesting one. I mean, I'm very sure it is. Everyone has a unique story.
Well, that's true. I don't know if mine is too interesting. I think I had a pretty normal childhood growing up. I live in Florida now, but I was originally born and raised in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with both parents and a younger sister. And my sister and I are 11 months apart. So every year for 1 month, we're the same age. We're twins.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a pretty small town. I went to a very small high school, only 110 kids in our class, and
mm-hmm.
went to college at Michigan State University,
mm-hmm.
Where I got a degree in business. And that's about it. It's really not very interesting, But after college, I found my way to Florida, and that was really when I got into writing and got married, had twins, and all that. So.
Well, that's interesting. Now, when you were growing up, I mean, you have you just have one sister, or you have other siblings too?
Nope, just the one sister. That's it. Yeah.
So you guys got all the loving then, see? You kind of cornered the market there.
That's true. It was fun, especially for my dad, because obviously he was the only male in a household full of females, so he got to deal with all the drama that comes with three women in the house. But it was a lot of fun. He was a good sport and a great dad, and we had a great time, so...
Was he more of a, and I'm using this term loosely right here, it's no inference because it's just, again, real life, real situation.
Mm-hmm.
Was your dad more like that sort of a macho guy, and the reason why I'm leading this statement I'm making, and I'll tell you why as soon as you finish, explain to me what you need to explain. But was he sort of like that macho guy, then now having all this women in his life?
You know what? Actually, my dad wasn't very macho, which probably served him well because he really wasn't that interested in sports. And, he was a guy, he had
right,
typical
right.
guy interests, but it wasn't like he pushed us, into playing sports or doing a lot of the guy stuff. He liked to cook, he did a lot of the cooking for us. And, he was interested in a lot of the same things that we were. So he was really the perfect dad to have a couple of daughters.
Fantastic. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, because I have a good friend who is a true Cajun, because he's, he was born and raised in Brobridge, Louisiana. And let me tell you a little quick story about him, because it was very interesting about Terry is that he grew up, typical in that culture where you hunt, you do all kinds of things, a guy
mm-hmm.
thing.
And
and he also played football. He played 4-year college and everything else. And then, of course, get married. And then his first child is a girl. Second
mm-hmm.
child is a girl. And the third one was a triplet with all girls.
Oh my goodness, five girls?
Yeah. So he kept on telling me, Johnny, I get voted out every time. You know? So it was very interesting. And here's a guy, like I say, you know, it's funny because it's like, and he lives in the country too. Well, when I say country, Brobridge is a beautiful little town in off I-10 in Louisiana. And so you have the wonderful Shopalai Basin, and you have all the, you name it, you know, duck hunting and all those, well, you know, maybe manly stuff or whatever you want to call it, you know, the outdoors, you know, kind of thing. And so obviously you would think, wow, it would be nice to have, you know, my son. You know?
Fun to share these manly interests with, right?
Precisely, precisely. And now you have this five women with you. And so, you know, but it's really, really funny because it's very interesting in a very heartwarming way because Terry is a wonderful dad and he really connects. Actually, it's very interesting. I think growing up, I think even in my situation, I think the women tend to gravitate towards the dad,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken, because I know my sister is a lot closer to my dad than I was in some ways, you know. And then I gravitate, the boys tend to gravitate towards mommy.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, because I have four sons, and I'm very, very close to them, and
mm-hmm.
they tend to prefer my company over my husband's for some reason. And it's true. It's true, like you said. So,
it's just one of those things. I wanted to share that with you because it was quite interesting. But he did, and that was my first time being exposed to multiples because I know you, you've done a lot of work with multiples and families and everything else. And he told me that, Johnny, you'd be surprised on how much information and help and assistance you can get once you're in that shoe, because obviously, you know, as a regular parent, you just don't think about those kind of things. And then when you put in that situation, then you start doing research and everything else. And so that was quite interesting. So, I mean, great job you're doing as far as, you know, helping others with regards to multiples and twins, obviously. Coming back to, you know, what you and I here to talk about, prior to being an author, you were senior editor for the best-selling Chicken Soup for the Soul. Please tell us, what was that like?
Well, I actually worked as an editor for Health Communications, which
mm-hmm.
was the publisher at the time for mm-hmm. Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hired there about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on a lot of different books. I worked on their teen books, Christian books, and Jewish books I worked on for them. But I also worked on the Chicken Soup for the Soul books.
Mm-hmm.
And those were always my favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
I really just enjoyed all the stories that came in and reading the stories and what I learned. And when I left Health Communications after my twins were born in 2003, I left there to pursue a freelance career and
mm-hmm.
work from home, because obviously when you have four sons, it's a little hard to go into an office and raise four kids at the same time. So I did that. And one of the things I regretted most about leaving was that I was going to really miss working on the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And so I did continue doing some freelance work for them, proofreading the books for the company.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Chicken Soup for the Soul ended up moving to another publisher, and I contacted them and asked if they needed some help, you know, some experience.
Yeah.
And they said, sure. Fortunately, they agreed, and so I've been working with them ever since. So it's just been a wonderful, long relationship with Chicken Soup for the Soul, and being an editor for them originally, I think, was really really a bonus, you
mm-hmm,
know,
mm-hmm.
in being able to work with them also as a co-author later on.
Did you, does it help you, being an editor for them, to formulate your thought process in your writing, in your writings, and the things that you came up with, as far as, you know, obviously you wrote a lot of articles, obviously, but then mm-hmm. when you start writing your own books and all that, does that help you to sort of, you know, get into the trenches and have a different perspective?
It does, absolutely. I mean, I feel very fortunate that I was an editor before becoming a writer, because it really gave me an inside look into the publishing business
mm-hmm.
and what kinds of books are out there and what people are reading and what editors look for. You know, I learned how to write a proposal and a query letter and,
mm-hmm.
You know, all that stuff I knew before I even started writing books on my own. And and that was definitely a plus. I mean, most people have to start from scratch. You know, they decide to write a book, and then they think to themselves, okay, what do I need to do to write this book? You know, they have to do the research and come up with this all on their own and figure it out. And so it was definitely an advantage for me, you know, to have that position, because I at least I was a step ahead of a lot of people in terms of knowing what I needed to do to try and get published, you know, later on. So.
Now, you and your husband obviously had a wonderful family surprise. That is, you know, you guys were blessed with twins. How
a big surprise.
How did that change the dynamics of your family?
Oh, gosh. enormously is all that I can say. When I met my husband, I was actually, I had two children, my two oldest boys, and I was a single parent. I've been divorced and have been raising them by myself for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So for a long time, it was just the three of us, you know, our cozy little home with mom and two kids. And then in a very short period of time, you know, I remarried, and we discovered unexpectedly that I was expecting twins, and so it felt like overnight we went from a household of three and doubled to a household of six. So it was a big adjustment, you know, especially the first year or so, and especially for my husband, because he had no children prior to us to getting together. So suddenly he was a father of four sons, whereas before, you know, he'd been on his own and had the house to himself. So it was a big change for everybody.
But what's interesting, though, I mean, what you mentioned, I did a show way back in, I believe, during the Mother's Day month in May, and one of my guests was a blended family coach and counselor. And she told me what's very interesting is that for the first time by next year, there will be more blended family in the United States than there ever was, you know, at any given
traditional
time.
Traditional families,
And so that's certainly, you know, it's not unusual, and so the adjustments that one has to make appropriately to accommodate that and its real life, real situation, and I really appreciate the fact that you shared that with all of us, because these are the things that, you know, it's out there. And if we bring it to the forefront and making people understand that, you know, hey, you can make it work because you, you know, you're the author of your life, basically, in a nutshell. And so, and so what you guys did was, you know, wonderful. Now, coming back as far as twins is concerned, you know, is it something that was ever in his family line or in your line, family line, so to speak?
Not really, no. He had... one set of cousins, he had twin cousins, and there were no twins on my side of the family at all. And usually if it is inherited, you know, if there's a family trait to have twins, usually it's on the woman's side. And, yeah, there were no twins in my family at all. So you can imagine our surprise. we weren't using a medical treatment or anything. You know, it wasn't expected. And so it was very surprising.
Well, that's obviously wonderful news, and so it just changes the dynamics, I guess, in the situation and everything else. Now, then you became a work-at-home mom, basically, because of the work and, of course, the challenges at home and everything else. At that time, were there books on parenting twins that helped you along the way in terms of with your newfound challenge as a mother?
There were some. There were a few things out. Christina Tingloff's book comes to mind. She wrote a book called Double Duty, which I bought and found a lot of interesting and useful information in. And, of course, there's Twins Magazine, and they had put together a couple of publications, mostly from the articles that they had printed in their magazine. So there was some help, but I think back then, there weren't quite as many twins as there are now. It seems like every year we get more and more twins and multiples being born. And fortunately, you know, the demand in the books for that have increased along with the demand for that. So there are definitely a lot more books available now. But of course, you know, you can always find some information. And the best way is just really to network with other parents of multiples, because, as I always say, they're really the experts on raising twins. You don't really know what it's like to raise twins until you've actually gone through it. And figured out how to deal with all of the issues that are unique to raising twins. So that was really where I got, my best advice was from other parents of twins.
Prior to having twins, obviously, I mean, you have gone through a period of time, like you were saying, you were a single parent and everything else. Some of the major shifts before you, you know, we all go through lives in sort of like what I consider, you know, you're making shifts,
mm-hmm.
whether it's major or minor, but there's shift nonetheless. Obviously, that certainly is a major shift that sort of propelled you and your career and your own personal desire from within to do what you're currently doing right now. But looking back in time, the challenges that you have had in life from childhood and moving forward, challenges can be just, you know, something minor or something major. But when you look back from that point in time going backwards, were there times that you felt like, you know, hey, I need something? There's sort of a paradigm shift that you went through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, I think when I was a single mother, it was what I did for my career was what mm-hmm. I did out of necessity. I had to raise my two kids, and mm-hmm. I was on my own. So mm-hmm. During that time, you go where the money is. You work,
right.
You work what you need to work to raise your family. And
mm-hmm.
so there was definitely a real shift when I got married and had twins, because that was really the first time when I felt sort of like I had a purpose. All of a sudden I started thinking, you know, I had the time and fortunately the resources where I could stay home
mm-hmm.
and start writing, you know, doing what I really loved. And, of course, you know, having twins was such a pivotal experience in my life, you know, something
mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting and something that mm-hmm. just changed my life so completely, and that really inspired me to write. So, yeah, it's definitely, I did almost feel like I've lived two different lives. You know, there was my single parent life and
mm-hmm.
doing what I needed to do there, and then all of a sudden I got a new lease on life and a new experience and started all over again with a new career and a bigger family. So.
Now, you were, you know, you went to college, and obviously you got a degree, you know, not in English, you know, literature or anything like that.
Right.
What inspired you to write? I mean, because it's like, people ask me this all the time. It's like, you wrote a book? I said, you're right. I have no earthly idea why I did that. But coming back to you in the sense that when you were going through, you know, we go to college, we have this idea about life and everything else, and so what happened there? What inspired you to write? And you were really heavy into blogging, and you have several sites right now currently that you're maintaining and making a contribution, but actually what really kind of kicked in?
Well, you know, writing is something that always interested me, but of course when I graduated from high school, you know, I thought about majoring in literature or English
mm-hmm.
or something mm-hmm. similar in college, but at that time this was the early 80s and
mm-hmm.
everybody was into business, you know,
mm-hmm.
this thing, you
mm-hmm.
got to get a business degree,
mm-hmm.
and I was really discouraged from getting an English degree. They all said, well, if you get an English degree, all you're going to be able to do is teach, you know,
that's
you're,
right.
you're going to
yeah.
need to become a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I really wanted to write. I just didn't feel called to be a teacher, at least at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, well, I really don't know what I want to do, but I'll major in business, and that way, you know, any company I work for is going to be a business, and, you know, it's kind of a general
mm-hmm.
degree that I could do anything with. But it seemed like every job that I had after that, I always fell into the role of editor. You know, I would start editing the company's newsletter or
mm-hmm.
any materials we put out, I would start editing them and
mm-hmm.
writing materials. And so I just sort of naturally fell into that role until,
mm-hmm.
you know, until eventually I wound up where I wanted to be, you know, being an actual editor and a writer. So
that's very, very interesting. Now, in your introduction of your latest book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Devotional Stories for Women, you wrote about how women have always shared stories with one another since the pioneer days through activities and hobbies and informal support group. What do you hope the readers will get out of reading this wonderful book?
Well, I think they need to know that, like I said in the introduction, that you know, they're never alone. And women have this really, as you demonstrated in your book as well, I think that women have this wonderful capacity to be there for each other and to support each other and, you know, to understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think women were just born to connect. And, you know, that was one of the things we wanted to get through in the book. The book is all, the devotions are all for women, and they're all written by women. And, you know, we just wanted them to know that other women in your life are going through the same experiences. If you're having parenting issues or problems with your health or your
mm-hmm.
marriage, perhaps, you know, your economic situation is not the greatest, which is happening a lot these days.
Yeah.
You know, we really wanted women to know that there are other women going through the same things, they're having the same issues, and they're not alone. You know, they can just reading. Sometimes all it really takes to feel better is just to read that other people, you know, are going through the same things. And it may not solve your problem overnight, you know, and people may not have all the answers, but sometimes
right.
you really just need to make that connection. So that was really what we wanted to convey through the book. And then, of course, the other thing is you're not alone because you have God. You know, you have God on your
right.
side. When you're not, when women are not available to speak to,
right.
you can speak to God, and He's always with you, and He can help you find the women in your life that you need to be, you know, to motivate you and inspire you. So.
Definitely. I think we all need the we're not a creature of isolation. You know, we need the connection with other people. And
mm-hmm.
and so you're right. And, of course, based on the global economy and life in general right now, because we're scattered in a way. We are and we're not. Yeah, comparatively, say, to, you know, during the pioneer days where you have close communities and everything, and there's a lot more, you know, we live in a closed system. You can't create order without creating disorder somewhere else. And I think more and more books would do well as far as when it comes to support of women and men,
mm-hmm.
or family in this case, and because simply because there's a need for it. And real life, real situation, that is, just not for something for the sake of, you know, writing something. I have selected the following stories, which I thought was wonderfully done, and it sort of it touches the heart and moves the soul in terms of the application can be applied. And actually, in all actuality, all the stories, if you read it from a standpoint of wanting to learn something, they can be applied to just about any situation. But I have selected some of these stories that I felt like that are very, very meaningful and sort of walk people through life, and it just touch each individual, you know, appropriately in certain situations that they are currently going through. The first one is Faith, in the subtitle of Faith, Women of Faith by Phyllis Sexton. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, we love this story because it was really just a beautiful tribute by the woman who wrote it, Phyllis Sexton,
mm-hmm.
to her mother. Her mother was born in the late 1800s
mm-hmm.
in a small ranching town, and she really had a very simple life like most people did in those days. But at the same time, she had a lot of tragedy in her life, or a lot of difficulties. She had three sons who fought in World War II. She had a son who fought in Korea. And eventually the mother actually went through a divorce, which was
mm-hmm.
almost unheard of, you know,
at
during
that time,
those days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for her to be alone. And so she wrote this story in tribute to her mother because through it all, her mother just kept the faith, basically. She just kept going and was still an example to her kids, despite everything that she had gone through. I love how at the end the author says, you know, now whenever she has a decision to make in her life or when she has a doubt, all she has to do is ask herself, what would Mom do? You know, she just thinks back, what would Mom have done in this situation? And she knows what she should do. So it was just a beautiful story, and I think a tribute really to all mothers and how they selfishly give of themselves and, you know, set an example for their children throughout their lives. So,
what moved me about that, especially in the situation we're in right now, because we are in two wars, even though one is winding down supposedly. But that is a wonderful challenge because it talks about, you know, being able to let go and have God direct the steps, the footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We have no control over that, and people may not realize it. But you know, as we go through the things that we're going to be talking about this morning, but sometimes I can only merely imagine the fact that you know, here you have a child, and then you have to kind of let it go, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I can talk about it, but I know I'm it will never be the same as giving birth to someone.
Right.
Totally different.
Right. I mean, that's very hard for all mothers to do, to just let, you know, when your kids grow up. And I'm going through the same thing right now. I have my oldest son is now in college. He's going to be 20 years old this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to let him go. You know, it's so natural for mothers to want to know what's going on in their lives and help them to make their decisions and remind them to do this and that. And there just comes to a point where you have to say, you know, I've done my job. I hand him over to God and his life, and, you know, I have to trust that he's going to make the right decisions and do well. So that's a tough thing.
It's amazing. It just reminded me, you know, about when I read that, and it relates, you know, it hits a home run for me because, and the irony of it, you know, is the very first section of your book, and it reminded me about my relationship with my mom in Malaysia, because when I left home when I was 18, and we never saw each other until 8.5 years later.
Oh, wow. That was a long separation.
Yeah. And then I did not get a chance to go home till a total of 15 years, because like 7 more years afterwards that I had a chance to go home. And so, and we first communicated via mail. I mean, of course, now when you talk about that, what? You know, can you imagine? You know, it's like, because, and that's what went through my mind when you talk about this lady, you know, in the 1800s or even the 1900s or World War One, World War Two. They were communicating with one another via mail, and just imagine the fact that you write something, it takes about 2 to 3 weeks to get there,
mm-hmm.
and then given a couple of days for them to get back to you, it takes another 2 to 3 weeks. It takes a month long just to finish a conversation.
I know. Can you imagine? I mean, we just take it so much for good. At least now, you know, like you said, we have email and telephones.
Right.
And I just can't imagine, you know, having your son overseas in a war zone, having no idea what's going on with him. And
right.
then by the time you get a letter, the news is weeks old. So you still don't really know what's going on with him, whether he's safe or not. So.
Yeah, not the present moment, you see, because
right.
what you get is what was happening, say, 3-4 weeks ago. And,
exactly.
And so, what's the interesting part about it, you know, has that does that correlate to somewhere along the line where, say, perhaps the older generation has greater faith than the younger generation? That's something, you know, food for thought to think about.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. It's we tend to not, maybe mm-hmm. we don't need to rely on our faith so much anymore, at least
Precise.
We don't think we do, because we can pick up the phone and find out almost immediately how our kids are doing or someone
yeah.
we care for. And back then you did have to rely more on trust and
right.
and just knowing that, you know, your son was
well, we're conditioned because, you know, we live in a closed system, and that comes back to the concept again of the closed system where when it's all said and done, we were not challenged to have faith.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
That's
because
true.
Because we don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, no news, you know, is it good or bad? So I have to go and have faith that
mm-hmm.
it is good news. But now we don't, like you say, we pick up the phone or I am someone.
Yeah, we get the answers almost immediately. So.
Precisely, yeah. So, but anyway, I just thought I wanted to bring that up because I thought that, you know, when we talk, from that perspective, it expands the word faith tremendously, and it
mm-hmm.
applies into everything that we do,
mm-hmm.
because we no longer have the patience. We no longer have the patience within ourselves and the patience in faith. We live in the world of instantaneous gratification.
Exactly. That's true.
And so, but anyway, let's move to the second one, which I really like. This is by you,
mm-hmm.
about motherhood, baby's breath. I can just imagine, when I read that, and I have this picture in mind of exactly what that is, and it's fascinating. I think it really, really touched my heart.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I wrote this, actually wrote this down a long time ago. It's a
mm-hmm.
it's a story about my my oldest son, who I said before is almost 20 now. So,
mm-hmm.
And this was a moment when I was a brand new mother,
mm-hmm.
and I was dealing with everything that new mothers deal with for the very first time. You know,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't get my son to sleep. I was tired. I was, you know, not really feeling very good about myself at the moment. You know, it wasn't quite what I had expected type thing. And so it was, you know, it had been an overwhelming day, and I finally sat down on the couch with my son, and he was, you know, stretched out on me, and we both fell asleep on the couch. And
mm-hmm.
Suddenly, in the middle of the night, I felt a light on me. The moonlight was coming through the window, and I opened my eyes and just saw the moon illuminating this beautiful little baby on top of me. And you know how perfect
mm-hmm.
you know, little baby skin is.
Mm-hmm.
It's so
mm-hmm.
gorgeous. And it was just a beautiful moment. You know, I could feel his breath, which is why I called it baby's breath. I could feel his little
mm-hmm.
breath, you know, on my face. And that baby smell that you get, and you know, all of a sudden it was like everything that I was going through just fell away. You know, I just
mm-hmm.
felt so incredibly blessed at that moment to, you know, that I've been given this beautiful child, and that
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, it really didn't matter if I wasn't sleeping or, you know, he cried or whatever. It was just such a blessing, and that moment really
mm-hmm.
stuck with me. You know how sometimes you have a memory
mm-hmm.
and it just, you can go back to it when you need it, you know, whenever,
right.
after that, whenever I felt like I was going through a tough time or, you know, really frustrated with motherhood or something like that, I would, you know, I would go back to that moment and really revisit it in my mind, and just, it just reminded me how blessed I really was, that all that little stuff wasn't important. So that was why I wrote that story.
It's a beautiful story because sometimes we don't realize this, because I think, to me, when I read it, that was when, you know, of course, some of us are more spiritual than others.
Mm-hmm.
I can only speak for myself. And to me, that's when you realize that that's a greater, something is far greater than you.
Right.
And it's right on top of you, right there.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that's vulnerable, completely vulnerable, that needed you to be the all, you know, and I'm using this term loosely here, that you are your baby's God, basically.
Right, right. At that age, you are. You are.
Mm-hmm.
You provide everything for them.
Precisely.
You are,
precisely.
They're physically and emotionally. So.
Right, and so that's something that's very, very different. And this experience can actually, of course, you know, it relates more to you because that is your, you know, you gave birth to your son. And I, when I read that, I can see myself because I was adopted by my mom at birth, and knowing my mom because she had three miscarriages before,
mm-hmm.
and my sister was also adopted, and she actually adopted a little boy. About 6 to 7 months prior to adopting me, and the little boy lived for about a month and died.
Oh.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, my gosh, I mean, the tremendous amount of emotional challenge that my mom went through.
Oh, yeah, so much loss
yeah,
for her.
Yeah.
I'm sure she felt she would never be a mother.
Precisely. And
yeah.
So when times like that, when I read stories like that, that's, I could only imagine how she feels. And even now, we you know, we communicate on the phone every 2 weeks. And I remember the very first time when I did that, and this is from a son's perspective now, and I know I can never love her more than she does, you know, she loves me. But I would let her speak on the phone for however long she wants to.
mm-hmm.
I never cut her off and let her you know, in the conversation until she's tired talking with me, know, and giving her, you know, the opportunity to say whatever she wants to say. I mean, whether it's a complaint about my sister or whatever, you know, giving her that opportunity to kind of just lay it out there. And I think so. I can relate from the child's perspective. You know, when I read that wonderful story you wrote about. The next one is Life's Lessons Outside Our Comfort Zone by Julie Cruz. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, this story is really I like this story a lot because it's very personal to me as well. Even though I didn't write it, it's really a story about fears and facing our fears. This particular author was afraid to pray out loud. You know, a lot of times you're in situations when you're involved in Christian activities where, you know, they ask somebody to pray and you're supposed to lead the group in prayer.
Right.
And she was very afraid to do this. She didn't feel comfortable with it at all. But it was interesting because the more she resisted it, the more God seemed to put her in situations where she had to do it, you know, like, you know, she felt called to lead a small group in her home, and she thought, oh, this isn't going to be so bad because there were several women in the group who were very strong prayer leaders. So she thought, you know, I'll let them lead the prayer. Well, that isn't the way it worked out. You know, it turned out that she was really responsible for leading the prayer. Another time she was at lunch with her son, and her son, this was at a restaurant, and her son normally would pray over the meal before they ate, and her son always did the prayer. And for some reason, on this particular day, her son said, hey, Mom, I want you to do it this time. I want you to pray out loud. And these opportunities just kept coming up. A friend asked her to lead a parents in prayer group at school where she was expected to pray aloud. And she just, you know, she started to realize that God was really saying to her, you know, look, you can do this. You know, it's not that hard. I'm giving you these opportunities to grow, and, you know, I'll give you the strength to do it, and you'll get through it. And because she took that leap of faith and, you know, and chose to experience these situations, she really grew, you know, grew in realizing that she could do it. So it's a wonderful story.
It is, because when I read that, what I relate to, you know, we all have challenges that unless we grow up with this big ego that we can do everything in life, then, which I would say majority of us aren't, but at the same time, we have the seed of greatness within ourselves, and so given the opportunity, if we only allow ourselves to take the next step, and whether in your case or my case, and things that we are just led, and you know what? We have the ability within ourselves, and what happens is that if we don't resist it and we allow it to just come out naturally in whatever endeavor we do, and we have heart, we have faith, and that comes back again tying to the very first step of what we just talked about, having faith, then as we relax ourselves, then the genius within us, the talent within us, will just come out and take over, and it becomes a natural.
Right. I mean, it's just taking that first step, like you and I have both said. You know, we never imagined, I'm sure, a long time ago that we would write books or be doing a radio show or
that's right.
Or doing any of this stuff. You know, but you know, and people perhaps even discouraged us from doing them. But like you said, we had faith. You just even that little, as the Bible says, even that little mustard seed of faith, you know, it just takes a small kernel to grow, and just to take that step to walk, just walk a little bit into your outside your comfort zone into that place of fear, and you know, 99.9% of the time we find it works out wonderfully that we can do it.
It's just who you surround yourself with, and that comes back again to the association you have around you, because it is true. You're never an expert in your own backyard, but then you got to constantly look at who you surround yourself with, because the true friends that you have will support you and encourage you and bring the best out of you, or you have someone that constantly trying to squash your mustard seed and never let it grow. You know, it's true. Rather than being your hero and your best friend and encouraging you, and in her case, that they're all around her.
Mm-hmm.
Giving her every opportunity to support. The close support is there. You know, whoever you associate with makes a difference. It's a company that you keep, basically.
Exactly.
And so that's what I got out of that story, because there's so many aspects of the application. And I'm mentioning all this because I want the readers to, and by the way, this book is brand new. It just came out, this week?
Today. It's the first day, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you for being on my show.
Yep, you're my first show. It's debuted on your show.
Hey, that's wonderful. But I want to share that with the readers because, the stories like these, they are timeless. That's the way I look at it, because each time when you pick it up, you get something new out of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what's beautiful about it. The next one is in the category of illness, and For Everything There's a Season by Sandra Diane Stout.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about
that. This story is about a woman who basically has gone through some tremendous tragedies in her life, you know, probably more than most of us have gone through. Her daughter had a tumor in her hip and had to go through surgeries and being in a wheelchair. Soon after that, her family's barn and their dairy operation burned to the ground, so they lost their living. And then her husband had a terrible farm accident and ended up having one of his legs amputated.
Mm-hmm.
And the things just went on and on. The woman burned her hand, and she couldn't play the piano like she loved. They ended up having to leave the church that they had been members of for so long. It's just one of those situations where you say to yourself, how much more can this woman go through, you know?
Right.
But, you know, and again, it's a, you know, it's a beautiful story of faith, because no matter what she went through, she started to look at it from the other side, not so much I'm going through these horrible things, but this is an opportunity for me. This is, you know, this is building me up. This is giving me strength and endurance. You know, there's everything that we go through is a lesson.
Right.
You know, and something that makes us stronger in the end. And it really helped her to accept, you know, what she was going through. And, you know, of course, eventually, thank God, you know, somewhere along the line, things started to turn around and they rebuilt their business and their mm-hmm. and their health. But, you know, one of the lines that she uses at the end, I just love, she said, mm-hmm. God specializes in using our trials to prepare mm-hmm. us to accomplish mm-hmm. the awesome. And, I mean, that's so true. I think most of us would not be, you know, where we're at today if we hadn't gone through trials in our life. They really build us up. So, yeah.
Well, we can't, I look at it from this perspective of you can't speak from experience, and they certainly can.
Right.
Because they are the success story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. You can write and be an expert of what you're doing unless you experience it yourself first.
That's true. I mean, I couldn't have written a parenting book without being a parent, you know. It's true, though. Everything that you go through builds you up as an expert and authority on that subject. And it also enables you to help others. You know, I'm sure that this woman's experiences have been a real inspiration to other people who are going through tough times. I'm sure she's spoken with, you know, with other people who have been through a lot, and her... her being able to get through that was probably very inspirational to other people. So
definitely, and again, I'm using terms like this, messenger of God or whatever, in the sense that we have to look beyond ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we are the tool to affect someone else, if we are here to share the experience, then they certainly have done that.
That's true.
And so that's quite fascinating. And the next one, God's Helpers, God's Protection by Laurie Beebe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this story is really, I call it a miracle story. It's about a woman. She's traveling on business, and she's all alone in her hotel room one night. And she falls asleep, and suddenly the phone rings in the middle of the night. And she answers the phone, and the man tells her that he is from the front desk, and she left her credit card at the front desk, and he wants her to come down immediately and pick up her card. Well, she's, you know, she doesn't really question it. She's half asleep, but, you know, kind of out of it. She pulls on some clothes and goes to unlock the door, and some sort of force literally prevents her hand from opening the door. She just, she can't grab it, you know. She keeps trying to get, to grab the door, and for some reason, she cannot open the door. It's not that it was locked. It was just she couldn't even touch it. She couldn't touch the door handle. So by this time, she's woken up a little bit more and thought, oh, something's going on here, and she went to her purse and discovered that she did have her credit card. She hadn't left it at the desk, and so she called the desk and found out, you know, that nobody there had called. So they called the police, and the police showed up and found three men outside the hotel who were felons, who had records. And, you know, obviously they
were up to no good,
Yeah, they were up to no good. So it was it's just an amazing story that she was protected in that way, that, you know, something prevented her from from going out there and possibly getting, you know, seriously hurt or worse. So,
what touched me about that story is that, I mean, we all have gone through some of it. Sometimes we don't realize it, the things that we go through and in life, and we are guided. I believe in that, that we're guided in many ways that that we don't even, well, we take it for granted. We believe that we done things ourselves. Now, it's true that, you know, we have to do certain things in our life by ourselves, because then we will never learn. Because
that's
we are
true.
God's children, because God gives us the ability, free will, to do certain things. But at the same time, whether you believe it or not, I mean, everything that we do, we have choices, which means we have to think about it first. And so, and what makes us think yay or nay? It's the, if we tap into our inner self, our inner constitutions, our conscience, if our heart starts to race, then it's probably not the right decision.
Right.
If it's the right decision, then it's when your heart and your mind are operating in concert together. That's way, you know, that way you know you're doing the right thing.
That's true. I mean, some people call it, you know, intuition, or they might call it divine guidance or whatever. But like you said, we all have an internal compass that helps us in making these decisions. And I think a lot of people, like the woman in the story, need to learn to listen more to that voice inside, to that, or to, even to the visible signs, like you were talking about, your heart racing and that kind of thing. If we would stop for a moment and really think about what's going on in our minds and our bodies, you know, we would realize that we're being led to the right decision.
Yeah, so it makes a big difference, and so that's why I like that story very much. The next one is parenting, and this is again by you, and to me, it's very interesting. It's very touching, but I think it's a wonderful story. The Cross by the Side of the Road.
Okay. Well, this song I wrote about, or this story I wrote, because I tend to be a worrywart. And, you know, despite everything we've been talking about, I still worry. And this story is about how I was taking my son to school, and I would do this every day. And on our path to school, I would notice a cross by the side of the road. And it was one of those crosses that people put, you know, at the scene of an accident, when in memorial, you know, when somebody's been killed. And I happened to know that this was the site where a 14-year-old boy had been killed on his bicycle. And it just, you know, I almost say it almost spooked me, you know, every day I went by, because I had a son who was 14 at the time. And it just really affected me personally. I felt, you know, first of all, I was thinking, how must this poor family feel, you know, to have their son killed, you know, unexpectedly. And also, it just made me feel very vulnerable, like I can't protect my sons the way I want to. You know, it could all be over in a minute, and if it could happen to this child, you know, it could happen to my child. And so it really is just a story about learning to let go, you know. I think we talked about this earlier, about, you know, trusting that our kids, you know, are going to have to take care of themselves, that we can't protect right. them forever, and, you know, we can't worry about them forever. We have
right.
to let go of that. And so that was the message in this story.
No, it's a wonderful story. And the other flip side also, what I'm looking also at that is the power of positive thinking in terms of, you know, if you think positive energy, that, you know, the white light of God is always surrounding your loved ones
mm-hmm.
as a protective shield, then that's what you're projecting out there, versus if you let fear, you know, take over and you
that's
live
true.
Your life with paranoia. In all actuality, in the course of doing that, you're actually drawing the negative energy to fulfill, you know, because it's a prophecy.
Mm-hmm. That's
it's,
true.
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, one goes through and people don't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it really is a matter of where you put your thoughts, you know,
mm-hmm.
like you said, if you focus on spreading love over your children and protection, then, you know, more likely things are going to go well, just because that's where your focus is on. And
mm-hmm.
if you're thinking something bad is always going to happen, then,
right.
well, probably it is going to happen. Because
right, right. Because you're looking
you
for the bad in things versus the good.
Right.
And that applies for everything. I mean, let's not talk about life and death, but that applies to everything.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
true.
And so that's the flip side that people won't have to realize, because are you looking at the negative or at the positive? Because in loving your child so much and wanting him or her to succeed, to do the right things, but in the course of highlighting the wrong things, you're missing the right things.
That's true. That's
and,
true.
And so that's what I get, you know, by reading that particular story. The next one this is a wonderful one. Again, it's by you. Appearance could be deceiving under relationships. Tell us about that.
Okay. This is a story about my English literature teacher in high school. And basically, this teacher was the terror of the school. Everybody was afraid of her. She was, you know, she would have you stand up in front of class and recite, and
mm-hmm.
if you didn't get it right, she would humiliate you in
yeah.
front of the whole class. And
yeah.
she was just, you know, very unpleasant. And so one day I was standing at my locker, and she came up to me and said, you know, Susan, I'd like to speak with you. And, I was, you know, of course, immediately I was like, oh, what did I do? Oh, my gosh. I was terrified. And she said, you know, I heard you went to Japan recently, which I had the
mm-hmm.
summer before that, I had gone
mm-hmm.
to Japan. And she said, you know, I've been to Japan. I'd like to talk to you about your trip. And
uh-huh.
I was like, oh, okay. You know, so it turned out, you know, that I ended up having a very nice conversation with this woman, you know, and
mm-hmm.
we talked about my trip and her experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, it was a real lesson to me, because I think, especially as teenagers, but
sure.
even as adults, we tend to think of things in black and white terms, you know,
right,
either
right,
that
right.
person is nasty or that person is wonderful. And
right.
and it was a real lesson to me that she was a multidimensional person, that she really
mm-hmm.
did have another side to her. And, you know, maybe she was not quite the terror that
right.
that we all thought she was. I mean,
right.
I still didn't approve of the way that she conducted her class, but at least,
right.
you know, I started to think that maybe, you know, there were some reasons for the way that she was. So,
hey, I just wanted to, we all have that, because when I was in high school, we have the same situation too. But for better or worse, I mean, they have a mission. It's a delivery mechanism. To give them the benefit of doubt, maybe perhaps, you know, that's what she or he feels that they need to do to get their messages across. And again, it's the kind of thing, well, in the hearts of hearts, what actually she's trying to get across to you. If she ridicule you for good, that's it makes all the difference in the world. If she ridicule you literally to make you, you know, be out of the worst, then she is warped. You know,
right,
but when,
right.
Yeah, when you look
I
back
think
in
she
hindsight.
Did have-
Yeah.
Yeah. She probably did have some good intentions, you know. She
Precisely.
Probably wanted to toughen us up and get us to work harder and
Precisely.
And to really, yeah. So it's, you know, at that time it's like I said, it's tough to understand when you're a
oh,
teenager and
certainly.
You're being humiliated, but
certainly.
Looking back on it, yeah, you do realize she probably had some good reasons for the way that she was. And
very much so. And I have another one right here, which is interesting. And I'm going to take the lead on this one because this is very interesting right here. It's under relationships, and it's about Grandmother's Lessons by Tracy Powell. And
mm-hmm.
what's interesting about this story is that Tracy is obviously the granddaughter of this lady who had passed on, and she had gone and went through her grandmother's things. And one of the things that she found was a picture of her grandmother when she was young.
Mm-hmm.
And so she showed it to her grandfather, and the grandfather was smiling, and, you know, how wonderful memories that brought back to for him. And
mm-hmm.
so he ended up telling the granddaughter, obviously, Tracy, the story about how the grandmother have always had a very positive outlook about life. Here she had children during her time, and this is the irony of it. It sort of kind of tie in whether, for single parenting and everything else, because what happened was her biological grandfather went to the store one day and never came back, so basically abandoned the grandmother. And the grandmother, rather than, having all these kids to take care of and like, oh, my God, you know, what life is all about and everything else, challenges, sure, she lived her life with challenges and everything else, but there were moments in times when she needs to pick herself up. She would gather her friends, and they all will get dolled up, so to speak, and go to the beach and have fun. And that comes back to the idea about that support group in saying that, we're here to help each other out, that life is, beautiful, that life is out there, and there's something greater that will happen to us. And to me, the moral of the story was happiness comes from within.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so that's
true.
What I like about that beautiful piece. So I don't, feel free to interject your point of view with regards to that story.
No, I agree totally. I mean, this woman had every reason to get down and, to think that her dreams had been dashed and life was rough. And like you said, she found joy in the simple act of just getting together with her friends and going to the beach and realizing that her life was good. And it's a very inspirational story about this woman who was able to see the beauty of life despite, all that she had gone through.
Yeah, life isn't over, that, you can continue, and that's what she did, and obviously she got married and have a wonderful life, being with the same person who became grandparents. So mm-hmm. Things work out. And so that's the fascinating part of the story. And then the final one I would like to talk about is In Service to Others. And this is written by you about your son, and it goes by Where Can You Make a Difference? And that's something that's very exciting. And the reason why I brought that up is because this is where you talk about your kids coming home from school with flyers about helping, making a collection for children, poor children that you guys are working for, bringing non-perishable food, clothing, and household goods and everything else. And what I like about this story is that we all have this opportunity to make a positive difference in someone's life. And
mm-hmm.
that draws back down to about a couple of weeks ago, it's about a week ago that, they talk about how all the billionaires got together for a meeting. That includes Oprah and Warren Buffett and all that. And so-and-so's got this much, so-and-so's got that much. But what, to me, levels the playing field is that the unconditional love that you have within your heart, because that has got no degree. I can't say that I have more unconditional love than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes back to that motherly love, and that comes back to the natural women nurturing instincts, because that levels, when you talk about unconditional love, it balances off everything. And by the way, we're about to get off the air, but we're going to continue with the show because I thought this is a wonderful show. So for those of you who are listening on the air with us, please do tune in because this show will be completely archived. So we're going a little extra past 60 minutes. And for those who wants to continue to listen to this show, please continue because the show will be archived on its entirety. So coming back to what we're talking about here is that, to me, when you talk about Mother's Club, the connections that we have among women and everything else. And when you talk about unconditional love, building, you know, wanting to make a positive difference, your book is what it's all about. It's wanting to make a positive difference in someone else. So, Susan, what are your thoughts about that?
It's true. I mean, we all have something to give. We don't have to have a lot of money. We don't have to have a special talent. We don't have to be Oprah or someone spectacular like that. I think it really comes down to we all have something to offer each other, and we all need each other. And our friends and our family can be a source of comfort to us, and we have that same ability to change somebody else's life by being a source of love and comfort and support to them. And that's really the bottom line. I think, you know, we're all capable of more than we know and of accomplishing more than we know. We all have that ability within us to change a life and to contribute to somebody else's well-being, whether it's as a mother or a friend or a daughter or a son or a husband.
And what I like about it, you know, you started at a very young age because you're thinking ahead, and you're teaching the children to be mindful about, hey, you don't have to, quote-unquote, make it in this world to make a positive difference in someone's life.
Exactly. You don't. It's not a matter of being the big, you know, a big powerful man or something like that. It's really not what it's all about.
Right. And to give you an interesting analogy is, you know, if someone were to come up to you and say, hey, I need $1,000, I can assure you that person need that $1,000 is as much as that person who say, hey, can you spare me a nickel, because that would complete me to make that phone call.
Right.
An emergency. I think, and that's what I'm trying to get across to people, because people need to understand that penny or that nickel has equal weight to that $1,000 need to the person who is requesting it.
Right. It's all relative. It's
that's right.
It's just as valuable to that person as precisely to anyone else. Yeah.
Yeah. If we are the one who is making that value assessment, whoa, $1,000 versus a nickel or a dime or a penny. But not to that person. Of course, you know, we're talking about situations where it's legitimate, you know, situations here, because the gravity of the weight for the person asking is the same thing. But obviously, it makes us feel, you know, good, and we should feel the same way, because we can afford, if we can afford to give a penny, we give a penny, and we should feel as good as if we have given that $1,000 to that person that you know that needed the $1,000. We shouldn't feel less than the fact that we only gave a penny, because that penny is worth the weight of that $1,000.
It is. It can have just as strong an impact on somebody's life as.
Precisely.
That $1,000. So.
That's right. Susan, how can someone get in touch with you to get more information about you and your books?
Well, they can. I have a website. It's susanheim.com. It's S-U-S-A-N. My last name is spelled H-E-I-M, as in Mary. So susanheim.com. I do need to get this book up there on the site. I haven't done that yet. So I will do that, as well as All in the Family, my next book, which comes out in 2 weeks. So they can do that, and you can contact me through that site. If anybody would like to send me an email or say hi, I would love to hear from you. And you can do it through that site. I also have a parenting blog, and you can also access it through that site as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. And what can we expect from you in 2010?
Well, in 2010, I hope to do another Chicken Soup for the Soul devotional book. And I also have a small devotional book coming out for mothers of multiples. It's with a company called Devotions to Go. And I'm thinking about maybe doubling in a little bit of fiction next year. I've done 7 books of nonfiction, so I might try my hand at writing a little fiction too. So we'll see.
That's fantastic. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, we are, you know, closing up the show, obviously. We went a little bit over on the air, but certainly everything that we talk about will be archived and can be assessed by anyone at any time. For all my guests that I have on the show, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with us this morning?
I think my recipe would just be to believe in yourself, to realize that you're capable of more than you know. I think we touched on this already, really. You know, just know that you don't need special talents or abilities. Just believe in yourself and have faith that things will be okay. And that's really all you need to get through life. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It's a wonderful advice, wonderful recipes. Susan, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me and on being at From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Apologize for running a little bit over, but I believe that the conversation warrants that, and Susan is doing a tremendous job with devotional stories for women, and I believe that this is going to be a super seller for the holiday season. So please do go to Susan's website for additional information about this. Please join me next Tuesday morning as we continue with our theme from My Mama's Kitchen Recommends. My guest will be Deborah Weed. She is an artist and the author of The Luckiest Penny. It is a children's book about having a healthy set of values that will assist them on their journey in life. This book's genre is a fable, allegory, and the illustrations are by Ernest Sokoloff. And additionally, this book is being made into a musical interactive production, and it should be out by next month, November of 2009. We will be discussing her life's journey, her book, The Luckiest Penny, and her mission of wanting to empower children. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my weekly recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter.com/FMMK Talk Radio. And thank you again for listening this morning, and have a great week. Susan, thank you again, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.